Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Generation Y ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today. Listen to a bold new take on George Orwell's classic 1984 on Audible, starring an epic cast with Andrew Garfield, Cynthia Erivo, and Andrew Scott, and featuring Tom Hardy as Big Brother. Plus, a haunting original score by Matthew Bellamy and Elon Ashkari that takes this thrilling production to the next level. Experience an immersive listening experience like nothing you've heard before. This chilling tale of constant surveillance, thought police, and rebellion is more relevant now than ever. Big Brother is watching and listening. Hear why those who control the past control the future. Listen to George Orwell's 1984 on Audible now. Go to audible.com/bigbrother.
We're brought to you by Audible. Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere, while traveling, working out, walking, or doing your chores. I usually listen to Audible when I'm on a plane because it's the best way to keep my mind off the boredom and claustrophobia of being in a plane. I'm currently listening to The Long Walk. It was one of Stephen King's first books that he wrote under Richard Bachman. It's an incredible story about teens who are volunteered to go on a long walk. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. Right now, new members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/GWP or text GWP to 500-500. That's audible.com/GWP or text GWP to 500-500.
How are you doing tonight, Aaron?
I'm doing as well as I can, you know, given that we're about to talk about murder.
Yeah, we were just reading funny stuff and doing a Q&A with our patrons. Thank you so much for everyone that joined in. It wasn't announced or anything. We just thought we'd throw one, a live chat up real quick and see what people had to say. So thank you everyone that joined in, and thank you everybody that's donating to us, and I want to thank my peripheral donors also.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code AUDIO to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code AUDIO at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code AUDIO.
This episode is brought to you by June's Journey. Unleash your inner sleuth and step into the glamorous 1920s. Uncover scandalous family secrets and solve the mysterious murder of June Parker's sister. With dazzling hidden object scenes and riveting storylines in each chapter, June's Journey invites you to a thrilling era of mystery and romance. And now, June needs your help, detective. Download June's Journey for free today on iOS and Android. Your adventure awaits.
This is your last chance to save 65% on a full year of BODi. I'm Carl, co-founder of BODi. That's B-O-D-I. And I want to help you lean into your decision to start working out and eating better. Right now, if you sign up for a one-year subscription to BODi, I'll give you 65% off. Look, I know it's not easy to get fit and lose weight, especially if you're trying to figure it out by yourself. But we make it simple. Just follow a program for 20 to 30 minutes day by day and lose 5 to 10 pounds a month. We have over 120 programs that have been tested and proven to work, and almost 300,000 five-star reviews in the App Store to prove it. BODi also has complete eating plans and thousands of healthy, delicious recipes. So stop guessing and start seeing results with BODi. And let me give you 65% off right now so you save big on the app that CNN underscored named Best Fitness App. But the sale ends this week, so don't wait. Sign up for a year of BODi and save 65%. Just go to BODi.com. That's B-O-D-I with an I.com.
So, what are we talking about tonight, Aaron?
Tonight we're talking about the death of Mae Griner, This took place on October 31st, 1999, in Wellesley, Massachusetts. Dr. Dirk Greineder and his wife, Mabel, they were married for 31 years, drive to Morse's Pond. It's situated between routes 135 and 9 and covers about 100 acres.
And it's right next to the college, too.
Yeah, Wellesley College is pretty well known. With them was one of their dogs, a German Shepherd named Zephyr. They went for a walk. Now, the doctor said his wife was throwing a ball and she twisted her back. She was in some pain, so she decided to rest on a rock. And she said, "Don't worry about me. Just go ahead. I'll catch up later." But about 10 minutes later, he becomes concerned and he doubles back.
He just said he returned 10 minutes later. He wasn't concerned. But he returns in after 10 minutes and he cannot find his wife.
But his dog Zephyr does. Her body shows signs of being brutally attacked with a knife, and her neck has been slit open. He will return to his vehicle, to his van, and he will call the police from his cell phone that had been charging it. That's the case in a nutshell.
So the first responding officer to show up is Officer Fitzpatrick. He tells Fitzpatrick what happened. He says that he saw a suspect or somebody suspicious looking, and he took after him down a path, which was not back to his car, but actually another path that was away from his wife. And then he returned because he couldn't catch up with him. He also asked Officer Fitzpatrick, "Is my wife dead? And am I under arrest?" Then the lead investigator shows up, and his name's Marty Foley. And Detective Foley hasn't seen the body, doesn't really know what's going on, except for this man's wife has been attacked. He's speaking with Dirk, getting information from him, and Dirk tells him, "I performed CPR on her, and I checked her pulse on her neck. I couldn't find a pulse." And at that point, Detective Foley's about 100 feet from the body, from May. And he sees that the ground around her is actually like a soft, sandy dirt. So he doesn't want to go anywhere closer because he doesn't want to taint the scene with his shoe prints. He doesn't want to add any additional variables here. But even from 100 feet, he can tell that her neck has been sliced open and he can see all the blood. And he's looking at Dirk and noticing that his hands are clean. And he asks him, "Did you wash your hands?" And he says, "No, I did not." And at that point, he says, "Well, I'm going to need your clothes for testing." And he stops questioning him because now in his mind, this is his prime suspect. And he came to that conclusion pretty quick because this man just said that he was performing CPR on a woman who's been stabbed repeatedly in the chest and checked her neck for pulse, which was sliced open, yet he doesn't have a single drop of blood on his hands. But the detective doesn't have all the information yet. For instance, he doesn't know that Detective Fitzpatrick was told that there was another suspicious suspect on the grounds that this man had chased down, had gone after. So he's taking Mr. Greineder's word for everything at this point. He's just trying to gather information, but already there's a problem. His captain and all these people, they show up and they start investigating this. They take Mr. Greineder back to the station where he then asks for a lawyer. The questioning kind of comes to a halt at that point. So they're going to work the evidence that they have and start following leads that they can gather and canvass the area. So who is Mr. and Mrs. Greineder?
Dirk Greineder was born October 19, 1940 in Berlin, Germany.
His father was an interesting character. His father happened to be a SS officer with the German army and was a physician in a concentration camp. which I'm not going to say anything. I have a lot of German friends whose ancestors and grandparents were in the SS, and it doesn't mean anything, doesn't say anything about their character, but his father was a physician, and Dirk followed, at least in those footsteps, in the medical field.
The family moved to Beirut, Lebanon, when he was just 5 years old, and they lived there until after he graduated from high school, and that was in 1958. So in 1958, he moves to the United States, and he attends Yale University. Dirk Greinerder can speak 4 languages, English, German, French, and Arabic. He majored in biochemistry, and he graduated from Yale in 1962, then attended Case Western Reserve University in Cleveland, Ohio, and he graduated with an MD and PhD in 1970. But in 1964, Dirk would meet Mabel Chegwin. They would date for a little while and break up, but then get back together in 1966 and marry just 2 years later. So he's a doctor of pharmacology, and his now wife has a master's in medical surgical nursing. Dirk becomes an allergist. That's what he does for a living. He's an allergist. Really, nothing of note really happens until 1998. And this is somewhat significant because the last of their 3 children, Kirsten, Colin, and Britt, the last of them is Kirsten, and she moves out of the house. This is something Kirsten talked about. She said she was a little worried about her parents because, well, their whole lives centered around these kids. That they, you know, they, what do they call that? Empty nest? There's a concern there that with their lives centered around their kids, once the kids are gone, their lives are shaken up. But it seemed like Dirk and May were going out together a lot and spending time. And May did something. She made a big change. She started exercising. She started dressing more stylishly than she used to. It seemed like things were really looking good. And I think Carson felt like, well, no, everything's going to be fine. May would go back to school to go for her nurse practitioner's degree in 1999. At this point, Dirk is working at the Brighton and Women's Hospital and working a good number of hours, too. It's 1 month later, on October 31st, when this trip to Morse's Pond happens. And as Justin was saying, the investigators, after they arrive, are looking for evidence.
This is a very well-to-do area. There isn't a lot of crime in this area. There were 2 other murders that had happened, though. Irene Kennedy, who was 70 years old, and a man named Dick Ranger, who was 80 years old. They were in public parks and were killed. This is a little suspicious because you have a woman and a man in separate situations who are older in public areas that were murdered, and they're both unsolved. This might be a murder on the loose, right?
So 2 older people, separate incidents, are murdered. And so you wonder if possibly May had been killed in a similar way?
Well, yeah, that's what, jumping ahead, that's what the defense and Dirk and his family will say, is there's a murderer on the loose. But those other 2 murders were very quick, almost like robberies. Other weapons were involved. Nothing like May's murder, which I think we can all agree is overkill. She's been hit in the head with a mallet, stabbed multiple times, and almost decapitated.
May had 10 wounds. She had a 2-inch laceration on the back of her head, and the medical examiner does believe it was caused by a hammer, and it's a drilling hammer. This hammer was found nearby. It was an Estwang hammer.
And if you don't know what a drilling hammer is, imagine a sledgehammer, but the size of a regular hammer. It's got the handle of a regular hammer, but the head of a sledgehammer. It's pretty mean looking.
The medical examiner didn't think, though, that this blow would have killed her or even knocked her unconscious. Now, it would have hurt like crazy. It would have done some damage, but this was more of an ambush attack. There were two stab wounds to her chest, but they appeared to be post-mortem since there wasn't much blood. There was a quarter-inch stab wound to the left side of her head, as well as a fracture in that same area that was about 2.5 inches long. She had 5 superficial stab wounds to her head as well. Medical examiner measured the wound to her throat that we had talked about. It was 5 inches long and 2.5 inches wide. He believes that she was fighting her attacker and that the knife was driven into her neck twice into the same area to cause this wound. And it severed all of the veins on the left side of her neck, going through her jugular veins as well as the draining veins, the carotid arteries. And he didn't find any defensive wounds at all, which when that occurs, you wonder if she possibly knew the person who attacked her or if they got the jump on her and she was too weak to fight back because of the blow to the head.
It was said that there was 2 blows to the head. One was a glancing blow, and then the second one was the one that left that laceration, which probably would have knocked her down, but not knocked her out.
And it's surprising because if you look at this hammer online, just type in S-wing drilling hammer. I wouldn't want to get hit with that thing.
What they're used for is splitting granite. So you scar granite and then you put a wedge of some type there and then you use this hammer to give it a whack. So this is a very brutal attack. This is, I think him asking the other officer, is she dead, is a little weird because I think it's obvious. I think it was obvious from 100 feet away to our lead investigator that she was dead.
Yeah, she was described as ashen. And the wound on her neck was obvious.
So that very night at around 1 something in the morning, Investigator Foley gets a judge to sign off on a search warrant for Mr. Grinader's house. That's how fast they move on this.
Right. The husband is always the suspect. We say that how many episodes every month?
Yeah. And he actually did the right thing. He lawyered up immediately, so I can't really fault him for that. They're searching his house. They're going with him as their prime suspect, but they don't want to arrest him yet. They want to gather as much information, as much evidence as they can, because when they're investigating all the way up to the arrest, it's at law enforcement's pace. They control everything. As soon as they arrest him, or as soon as they arrest a suspect, that person has the right to a speedy trial, and they no longer control what's going to happen next. So they're taking their time, although I'm wondering how they don't have enough evidence already, but they're really taking their time, and a lot more things come to light about this man's personality and his past.
And is present.
Exactly.
But let's talk about what they find near the crime scene. You can find a map that details where all of the evidence was found, where May's body was found, where the vehicle was parked, you name it. It's a very simple map that will show you the whole scene and will give you a really good idea of what detectives were working with. Involved in this are a couple of storm drains. Justin, why don't you take them through where they found evidence and what they found in their search?
Well, there's a neighborhood that butts up against this. I'm just going to call it a park, but it's a wooded area with trails. The map online shows a road called Turner Road, but if you go to Google Maps, it's called Morris's Pond Access Road. And Turner Road is the actual street name that feeds into this. You follow this road down to the pond, and then there's a circle, which they describe as a traffic circle. And then there's a few trails leading off into the wooded area. Her body was found about 30 feet north of the traffic circle. Now, just south of the traffic circle, they find a buck knife, a hammer, and a right-handed glove. The search dogs will also find a left-handed glove that is back up towards the entrance to this park. And it's in a sewage drain that happens to be right next to where Mr. Grinader has parked his vehicle. So there's one glove right next to his vehicle. And then the knife, hammer, and the other glove just happened to be where he said he ran after the suspicious suspect. So this crazed murderer happened to dump the stuff before Dirk caught up with him and then doubled back and left the other glove up where Dirk parked his vehicle.
The glove, the hammer, and the knife you're talking about, that sewage drain or storm drain, that's about 35 feet from the crime scene. So it's really not that far. Again, the evidence, let's go through it real quick. They find a 2-pound drilling hammer. It's an S-wing. They find these work gloves, one in one drain and one in the other. They're mini dot sure grip gloves. And then they find the Schrade old timer knife. But they also find some plastic bags.
Weird.
Ziploc bags?
Yeah, and they're out of place.
What was with the Ziploc bags? I mean, what did they know what they were doing there?
They don't really give much of an explanation. I would assume that either the gloves were kept in them or the gloves were supposed to be placed in them for disposal after the murder, or the evidence was supposed to be placed in them, but they were just found. Possibly a rushed attack and not going as planned. Who knows?
We're brought to you by ZipRecruiter. So the other day, Aaron and I were trying to get concert tickets to a show we really wanted to see. And I waited before I bought my ticket. And guess what? I missed my chance. And that's why you have to act quickly or somebody else will get it instead. It's like hiring for your business. If you want to find the most talented people for your roles, you have to scoop them up before the competition does. So that's why the best way to do that is ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify top talent for your roles. And immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. Amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a qualified candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Take a moment to get a word from our sponsor, Field of Greens. I like eating healthy, and I've tried a lot of different supplements, I've tried juicing, and I've spent a lot of money and wasted a lot of time. And let me tell you, honestly, none of those things ever made me feel better. With Field of Greens, it's a superfood that gives you nutrition the way nature intended. It's packed full of organic fruits and vegetables, not extracts, and when you're getting those nutrients, you can sleep better. Notice things like your hair and your nails feel stronger, helps with digestion. You just feel better overall. My favorite flavor is the strawberry lemonade. I have a feeling you're going to love this product the way I do. But if for some reason you don't like it, they give you a 100% money-back guarantee. Plus, you can get 15% off your first order and free rush shipping. Visit fieldofgreens.com and use the promo code GenY. Promo code GenY at fieldofgreens.com. fieldofgreens.com. Go check it out.
Now, the dog leash had blood on it. Dirk says that the dog leash was wrapped around his wife's body and that the dog found her first. He says that his wife would tie the leash around her waist. So he was basically saying that he walked off with the dog with no leash.
It's kind of interesting because there weren't any dog prints around her body. In that soft sand we described, not a one. So the dog wasn't around her because we would have evidence of that. Obviously, when he was doing CPR and stuff, he got blood on him and then he grabbed the dog leash and got blood on the dog leash. Because there's no other way the leash would have blood on it unless he transferred it there. Maybe that's why he didn't have any blood on his hands, because he wiped it all off on a dog leash, right?
Yeah, the detectives are very confused by the doctor's statements and they can't make any sense of them. So they're having trouble with the blood on the leash. They're having trouble with the fact that this doctor would attempt CPR on his wife who has been nearly decapitated. If you look at this, the knife wound is horrific. There's no way that she would be alive after something like that. And then he also has no blood whatsoever on his hands. His hands are completely clean. There's no way for him to clean his hands out there. Dirk, when he's speaking with the police, he seems concerned about some things. One of the things he says is that he and his wife had nosebleeds that morning at the same time and that they shared a towel. He also says that May gave him a back rub, which may have involved some scratching, so she likely had his DNA under her fingernails, and he was concerned about that. He wanted to clarify why his DNA might be under her nails. Now, we were talking about how his hands were clean. There was blood on the leash. There was also some blood on his clothing, on his shoes. Blood spatter.
Which he explains because he went over to perform CPR and all these other things. Also, they find that her body was actually dragged a few more feet into the wooded area. So whoever attacked her drug her away from the path a little bit.
They believe they came up behind her body as it was on the ground and picked her up by what, the shoulders or something, or the arms, and then drug her off further. Their daughter, Britt, also made some statements, and she also spoke with her father at the station. When she was speaking with detectives, she said that her dad wasn't too excited about her mother going back to school. And she said that parents, as far as she knew, were in love and that they were faithful to one another. She said that her parents had a real big issue with her when she quit the Harvard medical program. I mean, the whole family was a medical school. Her two siblings would become doctors. She didn't. I think she became a manager at a fitness place or something like that. But after the questioning, she went over to her father and got loud. She said, "What happened between you and mom today? Did something happen?" Now, the detectives didn't hear everything she said after that, but after her dad left, she started yelling. She said, "Why do these psychotic, unexplained things happen to our family?"
That's kind of a crazy statement for her to make.
It makes you wonder what that means. Why do these psychotic, unexplained things happen to our family? What is she talking about?
Your guess is as good as mine, but all the children will lawyer up and stop talking to investigators. I think it all starts to come out a little bit during the trial.
Let's face it. This guy has really nothing in his favor. His statements are odd. Really, the only thing I can find that he does that would point to him trying to be on the up and up is that he does sign off on allowing some searches to happen. Other than that, I can't really see anything. Everything just looks very suspicious at this point.
Normally, if you have blood on your hands, it's a bad thing. But in this case, it's the lack of blood that seems to be the problem.
Yeah, he has blood elsewhere, mm-hmm. just not on his hands. His hands are way too clean. And of course, their first thought, the detectives, is that he was wearing gloves.
And then they find some gloves very close by.
Not only that, but that search of his house that Justin mentioned, well, they just happened to find other gloves that looked the same.
They were identical gloves, the same brand, everything. And he used these gloves when he would clean up the dog house or the dog kennels. He was the guy that took care of the dogs.
They did DNA testing, and they found DNA from both Dirk and his wife on the knife and on the work gloves.
But they did find an unknown DNA profile on the gloves that they say, oh, well, there is the suspicious man, right? But how did Dirk's DNA get on these gloves? That's weird. That's what?
As far as I can tell, it's the doctor saying that there must be contamination. He talked about, oh, well, she gave me a back rub. We both had nosebleeds. We shared a towel. So I think he's trying to say that since his DNA was under her fingers and on her hands, that somehow the transfer would happen again to other items.
I understand his logic, but in the collection of evidence, they typically bag it all up separately, and they bag it for its location and the time, and then they'll even sometimes send the evidence to different labs for testing. So you have to really screw up big time to cross-contaminate, especially to the murder weapon and two different gloves.
Dirk Greineder has a niece, Belinda Merkel. She was the one who was supposed to go and identify May.
At the coroner's office?
Yeah, at the coroner's. I don't know. It seemed like he really wanted her involved in all of this. And there seems to be some real tension between them. And Belinda doesn't trust him. She suspects him of being responsible for this crime. This is where the information about the nosebleeds came from. He told Belinda that he and May had nosebleeds at the same time that morning. And he said he told her that he didn't think May suffered. He thought it was probably a very swift attack and that she probably didn't suffer. It really bothered Belinda because later on, when he was talking to law enforcement, he didn't say that. He actually said something else. He started talking about how he believed that she may have been raped because of the way her clothes were situated. I think her pants were pulled down, her top was pulled up. And so it looked as though maybe she had suffered an attack before the fatal slashing.
He told one officer that he chased a suspect, didn't mention that to the lead investigator. He also asked that other officer if she was dead, if he was going to be arrested. His statements aren't gelling at all between the different people he spoke to. I can normally pass this off a little bit. It's a heightened situation. It's a very stressful situation. So I can see somebody babbling nonsense for the first hour or so. But it's about the time when they realize that he's taking a trip to San Diego that they feel that they need to make a move and arrest this man because that's a little too close to Mexico and he can just sneak on over the border.
We would be remiss if we didn't mention what we know about what Dirk had been up to in his, I guess you could say, his secret life, simply because this is part of what the prosecution will use as motive. What do we know about what Dirk had been up to that his wife really didn't know anything about?
Well, he was into a lot of hardcore porn sites, which is fine. I don't take any issue with that. He can go subscribe all he wants. But he also would hook up with escorts, and specifically was into threesomes that did not include his wife. So infidelity, lying, and this sexual urge that he's obviously not getting from his marriage. And she never made mention, his wife May never made mention of any of this. Not that it's something you would talk about, but she never made mention of any issues they were having either. If your husband's doing all these things, I would think that there would be some sign of that myself.
Well, their investigation revealed that Dirk had written himself two prescriptions for Viagra, which is interesting because Viagra came out in, what, 1998 or 1999?
It was around the same time. Right, as soon as it was on the market, this doctor's writing prescriptions for himself. What a guy.
And he's hiding the bottles in the garage. He also applied for a credit card, a corporate card to use under a phony company. And this is what he would use to pay for the sex lines they would call or for the escorts.
They actually tracked down some of these escorts because, you know, at this point they have his credit cards. They have all this information. So it's not that hard for them to find phone logs and credit card transactions. So they're going back. They're questioning some of these people that he's engaged with.
And they're also questioning him about his marriage. And the way he tells it is that they recently had sex. Now, the medical examiner was unable to find any evidence whatsoever that May had had sex or had been raped recently. So again, just more statements from the doctor that don't add up, that don't make any sense. His trial will take place in 2001, and all of these things will be brought up. They're painting a picture of a guy who was not happy being married. He had lost interest in his wife. He was very interested in escorts and in sex lines and porn sites. He wasn't happy with his marriage. That's the picture they paint. Some things that came out as well, just 2 days before May was murdered, both Dirk and May signed life insurance policies that were worth $500,000 each. Now, I don't know what all this means, because the defense tried saying, oh, look, they don't even know what they're talking about. Those policies did not go in effect yet. So you can't use that as a motive. There was no money motive with this. That's true. There's a waiting period. But still, it seems odd that they signed these life insurance policies 2 days before.
But the prosecutor, they uncover all this extracurricular activity, and they say that May must have found him out, and this caused a fight, and May was going to do something about it. So he had to murder her. That's the motive they come up with. Like most cases, I never like the prosecution's theory or their motives. I think they're wrong on this. I don't think May had any clue. I don't think she found him out. He didn't need a trigger such as she was going to find out. I think he was sort of over it. He was over the marriage and he wanted out. I don't know why that's not reasonable enough, but prosecutions, they want more bang for their buck. They want to really pull at those heartstrings. So this guy's a despicable person and she was going to find it out, and she found him out, and now she has to die. During the trial, with all these things they're uncovering, they find out that the hammer and the gloves were purchased from a particular hardware store that was local to the area, and it's called Deals Hardware. This is the only place that carries that hammer and this brand of gloves. Three of those hammers were sold in the year of 1999. One of them was to an unknown individual who paid in cash early on in the year. The second hammer, they cannot say was sold to Dirk, but he was in the store that day buying other things with his credit card. And that hammer was purchased within 2 minutes of his other purchase with his credit card. Now, this third hammer was actually sold to Marty Foley, the lead investigator on the case. And that was months later.
Right, just as part of the investigation.
Yeah. Only two of these hammers could have been used. So are we to think that it was the one earlier in the year? Or are we to think that it's the one that was purchased 2 minutes after he was buying nails and other things? I'm going to go with the one that was purchased 2 minutes after, and I don't think the murderer was standing behind him in line. The gloves were also only available at this store, and he had an identical pair at home. So what are the chances that the murderer happened to have the exact same set of gloves and bought the hammer at the exact same store before he did? I don't even really care about the DNA evidence anymore. So the defense does their best here. They say that his past and his dealings online with the porn sites and the escorts should be inadmissible, should not matter. So the judge actually limits it to, I think, 7 days before the murder is all they can use in trial. So they can only talk about things that happened 7 days prior to the murder. And there's a lot. I mean, it almost makes it look worse, because if they were to allow everything in, sure, that looks bad, but you could say, well, this is everything in the past year or two.
Yeah, it's a pattern. I mean, he's always doing this, so it's not a big deal. Yeah.
But it kind of blows up in his face, because only 7 days, and they have like two escorts, a mountain of information.
A lot of activity in the 7 days leading up to the murder,
and it makes it look like he had just become obsessed with sex.
The defense also takes issue with him not being Mirandized. And this goes down in the trial, and it actually will come up later in appeals. Well, sorry, spoiler alert. They say that when he was questioned, when the first responding officer showed up to the scene, they should have read him his Miranda rights. Now, this is interesting because he's the one that called the police and spoke to the dispatcher. He's the one that talked to Officer Fitzpatrick and Foley and told them what happened. He gave his statements. They didn't arrest him that day. They didn't arrest him until much later. So is his statements the day of admissible or not? And that's kind of a good question. But they're using it against him because they're showing the discrepancies. So the defense is saying, well, okay, you can't do that. He wasn't Mirandized, so we can't use these statements against him. And the judge, at one point during the objections, when they're talking to Detective Foley, agrees and says, okay, that's fine. The questions need to end, and he will limit the amount of statements given the day of. But at that point, again, this sort of works against him in trial because now they're realizing that they're not able to talk about how he was responding to his wife's attack. So the defense sort of flip-flops at that point and says, okay, we're going to question Detective Foley about his statements, even though they were objecting when the prosecutor was asking him. But now they don't have anything showing that he was responding to his wife's attack. So they have to come back, start doing the questioning again. So it blows up in their face because they're claiming he wasn't Mirandized, but then they want to talk about what he did that day. You can't have it both ways. It's one or the other. Being that he wasn't under arrest, why would they read him his Miranda rights? They were reporting on the events that day. They were reporting on his statements. They got other statements from other people in the park, one of which saw him running from his wife's body, not crying, not calling for help, but just running. Nobody in the park saw a suspicious suspect. They only saw him. Doesn't mean that another person wasn't around, but so are they not allowed to use any of these statements? This is sort of a catch-22. It's sort of a, what do you do with that? And personally, I think it's admissible because he's the one that called the police. He's the one that talked to the police. If he was saying, I'm not going to talk to you, that's one thing, but he seemed willing. They have his phone records. They have his internet history, like they do. People don't know that they should just open up an incognito browser, clear their history. You know, it's real basic stuff, but
take a moment to get a word from our sponsor, Quince. Do you need to upgrade your wardrobe or home essentials at an unbeatable price? Well, Quince has you covered with timeless pieces that never go out of style, and you'll have them in your closet forever. And the best part? All Quince items are priced 50 to 80% off less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman, passes the savings on to you, and Quince only works with factories that are safe, ethical, with responsible manufacturing practices. Along with premium fabrics and finishes, how can you not love that? I recently got a duvet cover and a pair of awesome relaxed jeans. They're stretchy too. You can find all kinds of stuff at Quince. Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/GenY for free shipping on your first order and 365-day returns. That's Quince, Quince.com/GenY to get free shipping and 365-day returns. Quince.com/GenY. Today's episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Some of us spend our lives wishing we had more time, but time for what? If time was unlimited, what would you use it for? If you need to squeeze a special thing into your schedule, do you even know what's important to you and how to make that a priority? Well, with therapy, you can find out what matters to you so you can do more of it. We all need to vent sometimes. We all need to talk about some of the things that have happened to us. And I'll tell you right now, your friends might be sick of hearing about it. So take the burden off them. Let a professional help you. Sometimes it's as simple as just getting something off your back and letting somebody else know so you can feel validated and move on with your life. If you're thinking about starting therapy, Give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/GenY today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/GenY.
So what do they find in his phone records the day after his wife's murder?
Right. The day after she was murdered, he contacted an escort.
He's stressed out. His wife's been murdered. He needs relief, right?
No words.
This is insane at this point.
As you can imagine, the trial doesn't go his way. There's really no way to defend an indefensible man. On June 29th, 2001, he is found guilty of first-degree murder in the death of Mabel Greineder. He is sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole.
Now, the detectives will actually say that this wasn't an open and shut case. And I'm thinking, how the hell not? But they were a lot more hesitant and measured.
See, to me, I took it as intelligence. They didn't ever think, oh, we've got it. We've got it. No, I think they said, okay, this is good. And they kept looking, kept digging. And they didn't stop till they got everything they could possibly get. So that when it came time to put their evidence up against what the defense had, there would be no question. I wonder if that loss here on the defense is really on Dirk, because he just thought he was just too smart. Oh, I'll throw this stuff down the storm drain. They'll never find it. And I'll say, oh, well, I thought I saw someone running away. So it must have been some attacker. I mean, why would I do that? Why would I attack my wife out on a path like that in an area where there are people out and about?
I mean, and that's half of his defense is, what's the motive? Why would I do this? And why would I do it out in the open in a park? Which, yeah, why would you? That's the stupidest idea ever. Again, I'm looking at this guy and I'm thinking probably a genius in his field, but doesn't have a lick of common sense when it comes to other things. I think anyone that listens to our podcast, watches any of the forensic shows and crime shows, they would have done a better job with this murder than this guy. Going for a walk and breaking away for a few minutes and then coming back and, oh my God, my wife's dead. Who does that?
That keeps coming up when people hear about this case and they write into us. They say, wait, so your wife was hurting and you left her behind?
Yeah.
To walk your dog, to exercise the dog? Really? Yeah, that's what he did. Well, probably not.
Yeah, that's what he said. And please, for anyone who's listening, don't get me wrong. I do not find what he did to his wife funny at all. I find him ridiculous. His proclamations of innocence, his assertions that he's been railroaded. He's ridiculous. So we're going to get into some appeals here in a second, but let's just break this down. Let's say this was an actual third-party crazed murderer. So he walks away. His wife says her back hurts and she has to sit down, and he says, I'll come back. So he walks away and his phone is charging in the van. And then he comes back and he finds his wife. This person has murdered her. He chases this person down one path and then he comes back up, checks on his wife, goes to his car, calls the police from his phone. It's kind of fishy whether he goes to his wife first and then calls or what, but we're assuming he went to his wife first and then he went and called. But then this crazed murderer leaves the murder weapon and gloves at one sewer drain and then leaves another glove at another sewer drain. And he never came across this guy when he chased him off. I don't know. That doesn't really gel.
It doesn't make any sense. You can't make it make any sense. And there were witnesses out there that day. Each of them described this doctor running one way or running the other. And they just happened to be in those areas where they ended up finding evidence or near where his wife's body was.
So now let's play it out that he did it. He and his wife took the dog for a walk. Maybe, possibly, she said that her back hurt and she sat down. Let's just assume that part of the story is true. He takes the dog back to the van, puts the dog up, retrieves the gloves and the hammer and the knife from the van, and he comes back and he kills his wife. And then he tries to drag her body a little ways from the path. And then he goes and disposes of the glove and the hammer and the knife and one storm drain. And then he walks back to the van and disposes of the other glove and the drain literally across from his van, retrieves his phone, and then decides to call, which...
That's it. I mean, that's what happened, right?
I mean, because again, they didn't find dog prints anywhere around her body, but there was blood on the dog leash and there's his DNA and his wife's DNA on the knife and the gloves. It's so simple to me. I think that his ego and his arrogance, he thought these people are idiots. I'm educated. I'm a doctor. I don't need to pander to these peons. I am superior and I'm going to get away with this. That's how I think he thinks. And he's a moron because he doesn't have any common sense on how to stage a crime or anything. So he appeals. This is an interesting appeal because it's based on a few things. I guess during the jury deliberation, they were trying to figure out how this glove could have left a blood pattern on her glasses. So they took a banana and they poked it in the glove and then they pushed it on stuff to simulate a finger in one of the fingers of the glove. Also during the trial, during jury selection, it is said that the judge and the prosecutor, because it was a sensitive situation, they closed the court to the public for jury selection so they could ask these jurors these sensitive questions about the case. And Mr. Greinader wanted his children there, but they were not allowed to access the courtroom during jury selection. So possibly a few hours, but they were there sitting behind him, fully supporting him for the duration of the trial. Also, the collection of DNA evidence, the DNA of the third party that was found on the glove turned out to be inconclusive and possibly just an anomaly. And then he's appealing on his Miranda rights not being read to him.
These are, I mean, if you want to give him any kind of credit, these are technicalities.
At best.
Right. And that's what I'm saying. Yeah. This is a giant leap here. These don't change the facts.
No.
He wasn't comfortable because his kids weren't there to listen to the jurors being asked these questions. He should have been read his Miranda rights as soon as the police showed up. Well, that's not how anything works. I mean, they have to gather evidence. They have to investigate. They can't just show up and say, "You're the husband? Okay, cuff him, guys. Let's go."
Yeah. I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to throw the whole banana thing out. I'm not even going to look at the bloody print that the glove left on her glasses at all. I'm not going to care about his children being there for jury selection because that makes zero difference in the case. And let's, you know what? I'm even going to throw the DNA evidence out. I'm going to go for it. All that. But we know these gloves were used in the murder because they were found next to the knife and the hammer. I don't care if his DNA was found on it or not. What are the chances of the murderer having all these same things that he bought? And what are the chances that these items weren't used in the murder that just happened to his wife that same day? And this doesn't work out in his favor, no matter how I swing it. All of his appeals are pretty much getting shot down or have been shot down like they should be. Yet his children are still going public, have been very adamant about his innocence. For a bunch of Yale graduates, I would expect a little bit more intellect out of them, but I do feel extremely sorry for them because they have lost their mother and their father. So I have sympathy, but I'm just wondering what on earth they're thinking when it comes to their father's innocence.
Well, the statements that the doctor made to the detectives, they didn't make any sense. I don't think this entire situation makes sense at all to his children. And so for them, I can see why they can't see this logically, because it just doesn't make sense. They've lost everything and it's too painful. And they're just fighting to keep what they can.
This isn't a case of planted evidence. You could say, oh, maybe they transferred some DNA, but they know a mallet and a knife were used. They found those murder weapons, and they found gloves with those murder weapons. How do you get around that? His statements don't add up. He doesn't have any blood on his hands. The physical evidence is all I need here. It's unquestionable to me. I've never felt so certain somebody absolutely did the crime. And I'm thankful to Foley, the lead investigator, for being measured and being thorough. When he shows up, he doesn't go trample around the crime scene. He sees the ground. He wants this to be done right. He's questioning him, and he stops questioning him when he realizes this guy's probably going to be a suspect. He did everything right.
Again, you can't defend this guy. Justin, actually, when we were talking about this case before we recorded, he said, you know, I'd like to be able to show the pro stuff, the pro grinder stuff.
Be fair and balanced.
To be fair and balanced. And I just shook my head. It's very difficult. I'm not even sure what you could say other than early on he had signed off on some searches. That's about it.
And something that the investigator and a journalist, they actually wrote a book about this case. It's called A Murder in Wellesley, and it's very well written. In the book, they go with sort of the prosecution's theory of had this second life that possibly his wife found out about. But then they changed their mind, and they changed their mind because a victim of domestic violence reaches out to them and says, you got this all wrong. This is domestic violence in the home. And there wasn't any prior reports of abuse or police being called out to the home, but they're exactly right. Even when I think about my theory of he just wanted out of this marriage and he didn't want to have to go through a divorce and pay any alimony or anything. Well, his solution is to murder his wife. That's abuse. That is domestic abuse. His solution is to get rid of her. I think that's what's missed from the prosecution's viewpoint. And I think it's a little missed when people look at a case, a lot of cases where a husband kills their wife, even if there wasn't any prior history, it's always the husband, as we can tell. Why cause harm onto their spouse? There's easier ways to get out of a marriage or a relationship, but this is what they gamble on.
Send us some feedback on this one. Where does this guy rank among all these husbands who murder their wives? I mean, who would you put him up there with? Or does this guy really just take the cake? And if you look him up online, look up Dirk Greineder. There's an image or two where he kind of reminds me of Jack Nicholson in The Shining.
Or Dennis Rader.
Yeah, he almost looks like a cross between the two.
Yeah, you're talking about rankings. I think he's one of the dumbest. I'm just sad for May and her family, and even his own children who think he's not guilty.
Hey, Prime members, you can listen to the Generation Y podcast ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
Whether you're working out, walking, or running errands, Audible can help you keep your heart rate up month after month with their pulse-pounding collection of thrilling audiobooks that you can't hear anywhere else. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, which includes thousands of titles. This month, check out the Audible original, The Space Within. It's a chilling 8-part story about a psychiatrist, Dr. Maddie Weil, voiced by Academy Award winner Jessica Chastain, who is tasked with unlocking the memories of a child who went missing for 7 hours. Maddie soon discovers that there are more who have faced similar experiences, and the truth of what is happening to them may impact the fate of humankind. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500. That's audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500.